I want to talk a bit about rebirth now. So, according to Buddhism, if one acts skillfully, if one acts out of these positive motivations, one generally will realise a good rebirth. If one acts out of unskillful ones, one will have a bad rebirth. And the rebirth is seen in terms of six realms. There are two good realms, if you like, happy realms, and all the others are not really very desirable. And that's marked on this this model here. So the human realm is seen as ideal, it's seen as the axial realm, because it's the realm from which we can gain spiritual liberation, enlightenment. The other positive realm is the gods, which is a very pleasant, enjoyable realm, but can lead to a spiritual complacency, at least according to the tradition. Then we've got the Asura realm, which is sometimes called the realm of the angry gods or the warring gods. We've got the Praetors, or the realm of the hungry ghosts, the revenants, the hell beings, which is states of extreme suffering and pain, and then finally the animal realm. And I've kind of given some, if you like, psychological correspondences. So the god realm is a realm of kind of aesthetic enjoyment. The Asura realm is the realm of war, power, competitiveness, etc. The Praetor realm is the realm of neurosis and greed. Unassuageable greed. The hell realm is the realm of mental illness, of paranoia, etc. The animal realm is the realm of crude appetites. And the human realm, well, is the human realm. The human realm is a balanced realm, where there's a kind of balance of awareness, self-awareness, and there's a kind of mixture between pleasure and pain. Pain is not so excessive as to mean that one is completely caught up in pain, but pleasure isn't so intoxicating that one loses all idea of wanting to work on oneself, wanting to transcend one's limitations. Okay, so that's the six realms. So, if one lives a brutal life, a hateful life, maybe one will be reborn in the hell realm. Or if one's born in the human realm, at least according to the tradition, one will be reborn ugly and short-lived. So the tradition, at least, makes a correlation between our physical appearance and circumstances and our previous karma. So this touches on the Glenn Hoddle question. Glenn Hoddle, seemingly, I may be wrong about this, but my understanding is that Glenn Hoddle said something to the effect that people who are reborn as physically disabled are physically disabled because of their conduct in previous lives. And I was quite shocked and alarmed to read in the Daily Telegraph that the Dalai Lama agreed with him. I don't agree with this. I think this is... I'm not saying that it's never true. What I would say is that we can't know this. We don't know whether we are reborn as a disabled or ugly or whatever it is as a result of our previous conduct. I think there are other factors at play which we may know nothing about. One example I've been reflecting on recently is the example of the drug thalidomide, which was a drug that was administered to pregnant mothers, I think in the 70s or somewhere around there, maybe 60s, and this led to quite severe physical impairments and disablements in the children. So how do you explain that the mother took this drug as being a result of the previous karma of the child? It just seems crazy, really, to explain it in those terms. It would seem much more straightforward to explain it in terms of physiological factors. Well, you know, the mother took this drug, it had an effect on the growing fetus, and these were the consequences. I mean, I wouldn't like to rule it out altogether as saying that, say, one's physical appearance is never a result of one's previous actions. I don't know about that. But what I do want to say is that we shouldn't jump to this conclusion and say that, you've been reborn this way, that's because this is a punishment for your previous conduct. In fact, the Buddha himself in several places says that the results of karma is one of the imponderables. We can't actually know what the consequences of karma will be, or, you know, we can't always know that something, if something that happened to us was a result of karma or not. Similarly, things that happen to you in this life, you know, can we think that they're all the result of our previous karma? Well, let's take something as tragic and grim as the massacre in Dunblane. I believe that at this school, someone walked into this school with a gun and just indiscriminately shot quite a lot of the pupils. So how is it then that this guy is going to work out which of the pupils he has to shoot? You know, which are the ones that need to be punished for the previous conduct? If you think about it, it's ridiculous. At the same time, I'm not saying that things that happen to one in one's life are never the result of one's karma. I think they quite often are. And I think we do draw certain experiences towards ourselves. We have a certain affinity with certain experiences or certain people, if you like, because of the kind of habits that we have. But I think it's much too simplistic to think, such and such, something bad has happened to them, must have been something bad in their past life. Yeah, so what I want to say is that other people do not function as agents of your karma. It's not other people's job to go around punishing you for your previous karma. That isn't how it works. There's a complex interaction of karmic streams. We've got our karmic stream, we've got somebody else's karmic stream. When they come together, something happens. But what happens is not a punishment for our previous conduct, it's simply the organic consequences of these two karmic streams interacting. Sometimes one may act very unskillfully and not suffer at all, at least in this life. So, for example, a war criminal might escape punishment. Similarly, one might act very skillfully and suffer. So a saint might be murdered, for example. So, you know, if one sees karma in terms of external consequences, it doesn't really add up, doesn't make sense. So instead, we've got to see it in terms of the effect on the mind. So the war criminal may be plagued by a bad conscience, or at the very least, their emotional sensitivity is going to be severely impaired by, you know, the evil conduct that they've done. At the same time, the saint, presumably, is going to feel a free conscience, a clear conscience, even while they might suffer for it. Yeah. So just to summarise, we may have been born into the human realm, as we all have been, as a result of previous karma. But many of the circumstances that we experience and meet in the human realm may not necessarily or may not be results of our previous karma. There are other factors such as weather, climate, and biological processes that will play their part. Okay, just to kind of push on towards the end, if there's no self, what is reborn? Well, I want to just refer to an illustration given by the monk Nagasena in this text, The Melinda's Questions, that I mentioned earlier. This is what Nagasena says. It's like a fire which a man might kindle, and having warmed himself, he might leave it burning and go away. Then, if that fire were to set light to another man's field, and the owner were to seize him and accuse him before the king, and he were to say, "Your Majesty, I did not set this man's field on fire. The fire that I left burning was different to that which burnt his field." Still, he would be responsible. So this is Nagasena's illustration of what is reborn. As you see, in a way, it's not an explanation, it's an image. And I think that in a way, this indicates the difficulty or the problem of trying to explain what is reborn. Actually, it's not very easy to conceptualize. And the best way to talk is in terms of this image. And I think fire is a very good one, because it's very difficult to see any heart, any essence to fire. It just kind of spreads and one fire gives rise to another. But actually, what passes? You know, if you have one candle and you light another candle, what passes? The first candle is still there, but it does somehow give the first flame, rather, is still there, but it gives rise to the second flame. What passes? Okay. So that's my non-answer to what is reborn. But just kind of to give something a bit more to chew on, what we could say is what is reborn is a bundle of tendencies. When we die, another being will be born that perhaps in some way inherits some of the tendencies to action that we have. Some of the leading qualities or leading characteristics will be inherited. But again, they may change in the new life. So from a Buddhist point of view, we're not born, as people sometimes say, as blank slates. We're reborn with tendencies to behave, think, live in particular ways. Okay, just to conclude, just want to say just a couple of words about, well, the escape from karma. Because from a Buddhist point of view, the aim of life is actually to escape from the process of karma, rebirth, karma vipaka. Buddhism talks about the world in terms of samsara. This is the world as we know it. And samsara is the faring on. And so the Buddhist sees his life, his world, in terms of a constant birth and rebirth, lifetime to lifetime. I think it's quite difficult for us to get our head around this because we're very, well, generally very, you know, materialistically conditioned. And we just think, well, born, die, that's the end of it. But many Eastern traditions think very, very strongly in terms of this constant round of rebirth. And it's seen as a painful and undesirable thing because life is so uncertain. Even if you act skillfully, still bad things may happen. Still, you may experience a lot of suffering or dukkha. So from a Buddhist point of view, the aim is to escape from this process of karma and karma vipaka. And, well, this is done through gaining spiritual insight or what we call enlightenment. So when they die, what happens to an enlightened person? Well, nobody knows. Or rather, the Buddha refused to say. Perhaps he couldn't say. Who knows what he was thinking? But it seems that this is a question that we cannot answer. Some traditions say that an enlightened being may undertake future rebirth voluntarily in order to help other beings, in order to help them gain spiritual release. And this brings about the notion of the bodhisattva, or the enlightenment being, which maybe you've come across. And yeah, the bodhisattva deliberately undertakes rebirth out of compassion in order to help other beings to spiritually release themselves. This principle, by the way, is very much embodied in the idea of reincarnated spiritual lamas in the Tibetan Buddhist tradition. So traditionally the Dalai Lama is thought to be an enlightened being who over lifetimes takes rebirth in order to help beings. Okay, so I'll stop there. And I hope that I've given you some, you know, ideas about karma and about the notion of rebirth. I kind of feel that I've probably raised more questions than I've answered, but I think these things are a bit like that, really. But at least I hope that what I have done is perhaps presented a slightly subtler model of karma and rebirth than maybe you've come across so far, or at least models that I've heard that are in popular currency. Yeah, so we've got a bit of time for questions, maybe 10 minutes or so.